Welcome to Gen Z Hoops, the Gen Z basketball, coaching, and sports business show.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Gen Z Hoops podcast. Today, I'm joined by sports management and business development professional, Mr. Dylan Kraus. Dylan, how are you doing today, sir? And thank you so much for being on the show.
No worries, Ashton. Appreciate you reaching out to me and look forward to, just to chatting today. Just want to clarify, no relation to Jerry Kraus here. But appreciate you reaching out and, looking forward to having a good convo with you today.
Don't worry, I won't boo you even if you were, had any relation to Jerry Kraus.
He was a great executive. So, I'm not too worried.
All right. So I'd like to kick off our little discussion here. Can you talk a little bit about your connection to the game of basketball at a young age?
Yeah, of course. For me, played a huge role in my life. I mean, I think you can hear from my accent, not originally from the US. Was born and bred in South Africa. For me, sport's always been a huge part of my life. Been an athlete since I was a kid. My dad was a professional soccer player. My mom was a cyclist. So I've always had it in my genes. It's always been a huge part of me. Obviously playing rugby at a young age, I was looking for heroes out there, people that I could, shape my sports career around. And that really is when I stumbled upon, obviously, MJ was making basketball known across the world. For us in South Africa, obviously, people were wearing Jordan sneakers and this, that, and the next thing. So, I think that's where the first influence came for me. But when I was a little bit older, I think Shaq and Kobe, I'm a Laker fan. So Shaq and Kobe really were the ones that attracted me to the game. I think Kobe's outlook, I think we all know the Mamba mentality, that really brought me towards the game. I remember looking back now, going to the US and watching, as we spoke about before, this Melo at MSG. I remember sort of in that phase, the Spurs were dominating. Dwight Howard was Superman. And really, for me, basketball was the first sport that attracted me to coming to the U.S. And everything like that. Another cool story is at my high school, we had a decent basketball program. And they were hosting something in Africa called Basketball Without Borders, which is really a pipeline to allow young African kids a route to get here. And, I was just watching it and just seeing the talent we had. I was like, this is a sport, that I'd love to be involved in. And actually, Pascal Siakam, I think, was at one of those, if I'm correct, that Basketball Without Borders. Very, very cool. And that's basically my connection to basketball.
At a young age, just adding on to the question even more, when you were watching Michael Jordan and the Bulls and you see guys like Tony Kukoc and all these other international players, did that kind of inspire you at all to continue to play the game?
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, obviously, was quite young when Jordan and them pulled around. But when I was able to really look at the influence of foreign players on the NBA, you look at Tony Parker, you look at Ginobili, right now, you look at all the African players coming in, look at Siakam, Embiid, just to name a few. Obviously, Wemby's got some African roots as well. So, I think for me, it did kind of show me, okay, this is something as an African that I can get involved in, probably not as a player itself, but as a professional.
Okay. When did you know that you wanted to get into sports management? Because, not only the 3% of players end up going to play college. And then I think 1.5% end up going to play professionally from that 3%. So when did you know that you wanted to get into sports management?
Sure. So for me, as I expanded on, sports always been a huge part of my life. I think as an athlete, you go through things and you learn things. And obviously for me, we all want to be professional athletes, but sometimes, you just can't get there. And for me, I knew that I would make more of an impact maybe off the field than on the field itself. So I think sports management for me, after I graduated, I went on a gap year and I was able to explore the world. And I was actually in the US for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And basically, going to games, seeing the economy, seeing the business of sport is what really kicked me off to say, okay, well, I can pursue a career in this. I chatted to one of my professors, Professor Michael Goldman at the University of San Francisco. also a South African, and just went through what it looked like. At that time, it wasn't really something that I could do. I needed to come back from Gambia and make a bit of money and sit down for a bit before I could do that. And yeah, through Gap Year, I think working, I got an opportunity to work at Glasgow Rangers Football Club. Really gave me an insight into what a day-to-day looks like at a franchise. Was able to work with youth players, with the community, with the actual first team players itself, and have a look at front office as well, and just have a view of everything. And it really that's what really yeah kicked me off to sports management. And yeah, I mean, we'll kind of go through the story, but there was a point going forward where I was kind of like, either I'm gonna have to accept what I'm given or pursue what I want. And I knew sports management was what I wanted to pursue.
Yeah, I totally agree. In my case, actually, my mentor John Hartophilus, who actually started Gen Z Hoops, he's our founder. He works in the NBA commissioner's office right now and works for the Phantom Cams of the NBA. He always told me, like, Ash, that like, Ash, you're not always going to be like a basketball player. You're not going to be playing basketball for the rest of your life. So I really want you. You have a great personality and you know a lot about the game as well. So he always like pushes me to get more involved, connect with people like yourself, and try and like build my network by making these connections at the end of the day and learning more from people in the sports industry. So that was
Yeah,
just a way of connecting with you on that end.
100%. I mean, I agree with that 100%. I think a lot of us start off as fans, but then when you start to look at yourself as a professional, you start to look at the game from a different way. And really, since coming to the US, I think one thing in my program that I'll touch on is informational interviews. It's kind of just speaking to people and learning from them. I think that's the most important thing. I can learn something from you. You can learn something from me. That's kind of what we need to what we need to do here. And yeah, I mean, it's great to help people and great to be helped and have a mentor along the way. So that's absolutely great that you have that. And I think we all need that in our careers.
Yeah, most definitely. Also, this year I'm actually working as the manager of player development for my college's team because I'm not playing my first year in college. It's actually I'm in shock like how much it really goes into like running a college basketball program. Because as players on the playing side of things, we actually like see very little what's going on like the coaches' minds, like the game planning, the types of film. But now I get to see that aspect from like the different end, the coaching end of it, if anything. Like helping coach like break down film, helping with the preparation, helping like the drills and running the practice, than like being the player. So I really think that's like really beneficial to my future and like my understanding of the game on like a whole different level.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's only going to benefit you. And yeah, sometimes when you take a step back with some of my roles and you actually look at the athletes, you can kind of see, okay, this is how I can be successful. This is how I can add value here. And I mean, this is going to be an invaluable experience for you, I think, doing what you're doing this year. And I think, yeah, going forward, I mean, it can be a gradual step to take that step into the NBA or the WNBA or wherever you want to go, because player development is. It's something that we really need. Yes, they're players, but they're also humans, after all. So, yeah, I definitely think that's a great step for you.
Yeah, I totally agree. So you worked for Investec, which is one of the biggest sponsorship corporations in the sports industry. Can you talk a little bit about your time as an apprentice and then later when you became an external consultant as well as an account executive?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, after my gap year, I spent basically all my money. So I came back to South Africa. And for me, needed to find a job that was yeah going to allow me obviously to create some income and also something that was going to help me going forward in the direction that I wanted to go in. For me, Investec, obviously as a South African, I mean I obviously had family connections there, but for me and family had worked there for me it was something that was in my family. I'd seen Investec grow from the floor to where they were. It's crazy in terms of what they did in sports sponsorship and what they still do. I mean, looking at it now, you've got back then you had the Investec Derby, which was the horse race. They were sponsoring Investec Test cricket series overseas. I know in the US that's not such a huge sport. Rugby Test series, and then obviously Super Rugby. So their rights acquisitions for Super Rugby was something that was huge for them. I mean, they were everywhere in South Africa, Australia, and New Zealand. So yeah, I mean, I think Investing for me, number one, was crucial. My role as an account executive and external consultant was actually in private banking. It wasn't in the sporting part or in the sponsorship part. So really, what my job and what my role was there was to create a youth community for young professionals,
Okay.
and bring that together and really create that. But what I was lucky enough to do is I had people that were in the sports sponsorship team. And obviously, knowing my background, what they would do is approach me and allow me to look into the negotiations. At the time, what they were looking to do is acquire the rights for New Zealand Super Rugby. Why they wanted to do that, they wanted to expand their business operations to Australia and New Zealand, which they already had a footprint in. But it actually worked out that it was cheaper than acquiring the rights in South Africa. And from a sponsorship, I mean, ROI perspective, was basically the same ROI, predicted ROI. So it was extremely clever the way that they did it, to acquire those rights and move into that market. So yeah, I was able to get into that a little bit, and chat to them, and just get an idea of what they do behind the scenes to be able to sponsor these huge events, what these deals looks like, how they structure them, what goes into them. As well as at the same time, sort of parallel to that, learn how to create communities, learn how to, market and sell to people, learn how to, just look after customers, look after people. So, I mean, investing for me, as I say, gradually as I went there throughout my two plus years, the growth that I saw just in terms of as a professional, what was unreal, and set me up to hopefully and to keep pursuing and being successful. So, investing for me was a big step. A lot happened there in terms of me shaping my life and just making decisions that led to me being in this position right now.
Well, that's amazing. Like everyone like has the building blocks of where they start off from somewhere. For me, my building blocks were at my boarding school at Salisbury School up in Connecticut, actually. It was an all boys boarding school. Over there, like it was so different, like my perspective, like living on my own. It was like college before college, if anything. Like I build my own schedule when I want to go work out, when I want to get my shots up. And also my assistant coach my senior year really helped me like mature and become a man at the end of the day. And Bryce Daly, I know I've shouted him out on previous episodes, but yeah, like we meet these people, I feel like, throughout our lives. Like it could be like in your case, the people over at Investec like helped you really fulfill, really what do you call it, really like pursued your job in the future, like put you in a position to succeed going forward. And that's what Salisbury did for me. So after your role concluded with Investec, you moved to the US to pursue your master's degree. What was that experience like? If you talk a little bit about like this, like the working in South Africa and going to school in South Africa opposed to like going to school and working in the US, 'cause I know that's like, I want to know if it's like really that big of a difference. I'm really interested in that.
Sure, yeah, there definitely is a bit of a difference, and I'll touch on that. I think just to go back to what you said, Ash, I mean, crazy. I also went to an all boys boarding school in high
Oh,
school.
wow.
So yeah, also did that whole story, and I loved it, man. Like honestly, it shaped me into being someone that was independent. That, as you say, I mean, you have to take accountability for your own things. There's no mom or dad sitting there telling you what to do. You really have to be disciplined. And yeah, I think, man, like just hearing that was absolutely great. But yeah, to touch on what you said now, I think this was definitely a crazy time for me. Moving from South Africa to the US. It actually happened during the pandemic. So yeah, basically to go back to it, I mean, at Investec there was a point where I was speaking to Professor Goldman at USF, and speaking to my mom and speaking to everyone about, I want to pursue this dream. I want to go to the US. I want to get my master's in sport management. I want to do this. This I feel like is the right thing for me. And obviously, I mean, at the time, you have to convince people. I had to put budgets down and put proposals down and stuff like that, and really fight for it. And in my head, what I say is that was my game seven decision right there. I either decided not to go and stay at Investec and pursue my life in South Africa, or I decided to change my life, go to the US and pursue something, and and yeah, put it all out there. And I think for me, that game de seven decision, yeah, came then and really made the decision to come here. Was crazy. Obviously, so initially, was still working in South Africa and was supposed to start in June of that year or July of that year, somewhere around there, and actually couldn't come out to the US for the first, I think it was 4 months. I actually arrived here in October 30th. I actually arrived here on Halloween. So actually had to take my course from South Africa. So I was waking up at
Wow.
like 3 a.m. And going through till 7 a.m. and then sleeping, waking up, working as well. So that was crazy.
That's crazy.
Just off the bat, just sort of the universe saying, all right, if you really want this, how bad do you really want this? So that was that. And then yeah, kind of yeah, I mean, as I said, in the process of making that decision, I was lucky enough to get a scholarship. So yeah, it was just starting that off, and then kind of the barriers that COVID and the pandemic created in terms of travel and stuff like that created another aspect that was thrown into the mix. So yeah, it was pretty crazy having to overcome that. I finally got my visa and got out. Had to fly to Turkey to come all the way to the
Wow.
US, which was crazy. So yeah, arrived here October 30th. Literally walking in San Francisco. I mean, at that time, while it was elections. It was the pandemic. I mean, stores were boarded up. It was a crazy experience coming here. I'll tell you that much. So yeah, that was kind of I think just the transition of coming from South Africa to the US and starting off my master's. I think to go yeah, I think to go I'll go forward to go backwards. So I'll kind of speak about what it was like sort of working here and going through the process in compared to South Africa. So yeah, I mean, obviously arriving here and the pandemic was it was tough. I mean, settling into
Brutal.
to San Francisco, yeah, it was a tough time. I mean, being able to obviously not go out, you can't go in class, you can't meet all your cohort mates. You kind of have to just sit in the room and do what you need to do. But yeah, I think in those moments coming here, yeah, you kind of have to decide whether you have that grit and perseverance to get through. And for me, it was just, land that first job, just do whatever you can to get that job sorted and do yeah, what you can. Obviously, we'll touch on that. But I think in terms of we'll look at schooling in South Africa versus the US. Schooling in South Africa, very high level. Very, very great education there. I cannot fault it at all. It gave me a great infrastructure to come here. I think in terms of the grading scales there, quite a lot more harsh. There, I mean,
Wow.
if you're getting 75%, I mean that's basically an A on that side. So I think the grading scales are a little different. Obviously, we don't have grade point average and stuff like that. So in terms of grading, it's a little bit different. In terms of curriculum, yeah, I would say it's pretty much the same. I mean, obviously, in terms of my degrees in South Africa, it was more sort of on the accounting, finance, marketing side, and this side it was more on the sports management side. So I think yeah, then it was more analytical. Where coming over now and doing a master's degree, it's really different from undergraduate degrees, where it's a lot more thought-provoking. You really have to think about what you're doing. It's a lot more context. I mean, you really need to, when you're writing an essay, you really need to build the backbone of that essay. It really has to. I mean, you can't just freestyle things in a master's degree. So I think for me that was the difference. Coming over here was okay. I really have to put my time and effort into these things to make sure that what I'm crafting makes sense. And at the same time, I mean, you don't want to shortcut yourself. You really want to learn. And yeah, you want to take in everything that the program has. And for USF Sport Management, I mean, it's known worldwide now as one of the best programs. So for me, it was unbelievable getting to do that. I think in terms of work-wise, yeah, South Africa a little bit more relaxed. They have a lot more public holidays. People, I mean, kind of December 1st hits and everyone's like, cool, see you guys in January. We're
Wow.
out of here. So excuse me,
That sounds
a lot more
nice.
relaxed, a lot more relaxed there. And yeah, I mean, I think I don't want to bring up the word sort of mediocrity, but I mean, there's kind of not that level in the US. I feel like they push you as hard as possible to be the best as you can. You work a lot harder. Yeah, well, in South Africa, it's kind of more chill, more relaxed. I think that's living in California. I mean, obviously, the legislation. Yeah, I mean, people can basically it's at will work. So I mean, they can fire you and hire you as they want. Where in South Africa, there's a little bit more of a procedure you need to go through in
Right.
order for people to be removed from position. So as much as I mean, obviously you don't kind of want to talk about that. That does light a fire under you over here. I think people just work. I mean, what I've seen in the US, I mean, people work 365 days a year. I mean, some people are
Yep.
not taking holidays out here. They're going through it all. I mean, from my perspective, in my roles here, I felt like, you need to work harder if you really want to get where you want to be. I think the competitive environment in the US, I mean, we've got what, maybe 55, 60 million people in South Africa, and we've got what, 380, 390 million people here. So if you look at the competition, it's a completely different world. But yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, kind of try to touch on both of those. But yeah, if you have any more questions on those, happy to expand.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, that goes back to the idea, like, how much do you want it? As you mentioned before, like, I believe, like, the pandemic and, like, what you were saying, like, it really, like pressured a lot of people and, like, made them realize, like, which way do I want to go with my life? Do I want to keep doing what I'm doing, or do I want to get into something new? Like, do I really want to keep, like, struggling through this tough time with something I, like, don't even like doing? Or, like, do I want, like, how bad do you, like, the real question, the essential question was always, how much do you want? I remember we at Salisbury, my boarding school, we used to have to walk around with masks all the time. We used to have to like practice with masks. We couldn't even use the gym. We'd have to use like some outdoor court, like stone floor and all that stuff. Like triple rim backboard, it would be freezing cold outside. So like, how
Crazy.
much do you really want to get better? And like other, even I have friends who are attending Salisbury, but they're like virtual students, and they would be over in like China or Korea. Like our school, I honestly don't know the time difference off the top of my head, but they were going, like, we would be in school at like 8 a.m. and it would probably be like back like how many hours, and they'd be having to log on their Zoom, exhausted, trying to like keep up with us on like while they're on the other side of the world. So like, kudos to like you guys, like foreign students and like foreign workers, for like having that perseverance to get through that tough time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely tested you at the beginning, but for me, I mean, it was good because there was a lot of sacrifice from everyone sort of going into the process. So it was good to know and be tested straight away, and for people around me to see, okay, you do really want this. And yeah, it just helped me as well. Just to show myself, like, okay, like you do want this. So it was a challenging time, but a good time. But a good song.
Most definitely. So after pursuing your master's, you then made the transition to working for the Los Angeles Clippers as an inside sales executive. How were you able to get this position, and what did the position entail? Could you also talk a little bit about like what it was like being a part of the Clippers organization that same year? They actually went to their first conference finals appearance. Could you elaborate more on like what it was like to be a part of the organization at that time?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think coming to the US when I did October 30th, 2020, the first thing I wanted to do was land a job, but not just anything, something that was down the line of what I wanted to do. And it wasn't easy. As a sort of as a student coming over here, thank God the visa that I was on allowed me to work as well as study. But obviously, I mean, there are a few barriers in terms of hiring a foreign student versus hiring someone who's a US citizen. So I knew that I'd be up against it from that perspective. So I really just tried as hard as I could. I mean, I didn't even have a social security number at the time when I was looking for jobs and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, for me, it was just shooting shots at everything that I could. I saw an email come through USF Sport Management. They'll send out sort of email blasts in terms of certain opportunities that are up and stuff like that. So got an email blast about the Clippers inside sales. I thought, you know what, I've done sales before, I've done marketing, I think I could be successful. Put my my CV in, and yeah, got reached out to by Ben Wee, who was then head of inside sales at the LA Clippers, and got invited to to the interview process, which was obviously during the pandemic, which was pretty wild, to say the least. I think they had about three or four first round sort of group interviews where you've got 30 people on a Zoom call. And what they're doing is what they called an icebreaker, where basically you're squaring off against everyone else in the Zoom call in terms of a competition. So say, for instance, they'll say, all right, Dylan, you went to USF, X, you went to Oregon. Tell us why your college is better than the other college. And we did that all the way up until the knockout rounds, and I actually won won the competition in my group, which was crazy. So that was
Wow.
mad. Went through that first stage and got off that, and I was like, well, that's a good start. Hopefully, we can get through that. And then next round was group interviews again. Went through those, then one-on-ones, and yeah, finally found out that I got the role. And on that day, obviously super special, still remember it. Getting my first job and in the US was it was super cool. It was unbelievable to get that and to move forward. So yeah, forever grateful to the people that gave me that opportunity. In terms of the organization, man, getting in there, it is obviously being a Laker fan. I mean,
Yeah.
listen, there's a lot of Laker fans there, but you have to give it up to the LA Clippers in terms of the organization that they've been able to create there with Steve Ballmer, Jerry West, Gillian Zucker, Lawrence Frank, just in terms of the key positions there. It is a great organization. The culture that they created in the sales and inside sales division and membership sales was great. Unfortunately, it was still during COVID, so I wasn't really able to interact with everyone in the office and stuff like that constantly. So it was just being online with people and yeah, just going through that. And yeah, I think, I mean, there's no doubt why they're moving in the direction that they're moving now. I mean, that year, yes, conference finals was absolutely great, but I think they've got bigger aspirations. I think with Intuit Dome opening now and
Yeah.
stuff like that. I mean, listen, I mean, as a Laker fan, I'm never gonna say I'm scared of the Clippers. But I think that it's a great franchise. It's great what they're doing. And yeah, it was unreal to be a part of them. I mean, in inside sales, it's a grind. I mean, you're making 100 calls a day, 100 emails a day. You really are grinding as well. But it really does give you that infrastructure to be successful wherever you go. And for me, being able to generate the revenue that I did, we had a select a seat event, which is basically when all our season ticket holders come in and select their seats. And I had a great day then. It was just cool, top to bottom, the way that they. It's tough during a pandemic to keep people motivated and keep people involved. And they did a great job. So, yeah, being a part of the Clippers at that time was very exciting. I think obviously then they were announcing Intuit Dome, the plans were going in, so everything was kind of moving in that direction. And it was just a cool time with some cool people. And yeah, I mean, what they said to us at the beginning of Inside Sales is look around, these people will be connections of yours for years to come. And yeah, it's been great to see where other people have moved on to, where I've moved on to. So yeah, no, not a bad word to say about the Los Angeles Clippers. Really enjoyed my time there. And yeah, just loved the opportunity.
Wow, that's amazing. In terms of Intuit Dome, did you hear about like Steve Ballmer talking about like the Clippers fan section? I think he's calling it the wall or something like that, where it's like you only have to be Clipper fans in there. They track how much you cheer for them, and if you cheer for the other team, I believe it's only for like it's like luxury seating. And they go from like it goes from like the nosebleeds all the way down to courtside. It's like thousands of dollars for each ticket. Like, did you hear anything about that?
At the time, I mean, they were kind of just going into kind of the construction of the stadium. They were kind of just doing rendering in the offices and stuff like that. But when I did hear about that, I mean, obviously being South African involved in European sports, Borussia Dortmund, a football club in Germany, have sort of the same thing.
Really?
They've got the wall as well, where they've just it's a fans only section. Which is, I think, I mean, Steve Ballmer, that's so clever to introduce that into US sports. I don't think that's yeah. I mean, and yeah, I mean, if you think of Liverpool Football Club, you think of the Kop End, only Liverpool fans in there. So when I saw that, I thought, listen, that's great. That's creating a culture that's unreal. And kind of, I think the one stumbling block about the Clippers is that people say is kind of, how are you going to get a fan base away when you have one of, not one of the most successful basketball franchise in your city? How do you grab a bit of the market share? And for me being there, it is tough. I mean, speaking to people in LA and they're like, nah, I'm not, I'm a Lakers fan, I'm this, that, and the next thing. I think this will create a culture, a culture there. Everyone, can y'all just embracing the Clippers? I think it's a great idea. I honestly do. But yeah, I didn't hear about it at the time. But obviously hearing about it now, I think it's crazy that they're tracking how much people are sitting and standing and stuff like that. Yeah, it's insane. Hopefully those people will get discounts on the tickets. We'll see.
He even said, like, if you go in and cheer in like an opposing team's jersey, or if you cheer for the opposing team, like they'll know, they'll find out. I'm so curious, like, how does he have drones circling the arena, or like how do they know who's wearing what and who's cheering for what team? That's what I don't understand.
It's crazy. I mean, I think I saw like if you're cheering for the other team, you'll get like banned from the section or like
Yeah.
I was like, wow, okay, that's a bit extreme. But yeah, I think just to like chat about how they could do that. I know and actually a South African guy from South Africa, he came here and created a business called FanCam. It's basically a 360-degree camera, and they take sort of snapshots of the arena. And people can kind of go on, and you can get the photo of yourself and X, Y, and Z. So there is a lot of that
Cool.
technology out there, that can do that in terms of facial rec, in terms of like recognizing jerseys and things like that.
Right.
Yeah, I think they could do that, but like, I think it's a great move for the franchise. And I think a lot of other franchises across major league sports need to really embrace their home fans. I think obviously, and allow them just a place for everyone to come together as a community. If you're sitting in, I'll never forget. I'm a Manchester United fan, and I went to go and watch United. They traveled up to play Tottenham Hotspurs, and I sat in the. So basically, in England, it's a little bit different. You can't, if you're a fan of Manchester United, you definitely don't go sit with the Tottenham
Yeah,
fans.
exactly.
But there's a specific area called the away fan section, and I went to sit in the away fan section. Just the camaraderie of knowing it's kind of like us against the world sort of thing, or at home sitting, in the fan section, it brings a different dynamic at the game. And I think, yeah, it's going to be super cool to see how everything works out there.
Yeah, going back to what you were saying about opposing fans being in a home fan stadium. I actually played basketball in Greece. Got the opportunity to play over in Greece with an organization called Super League Athletic Academy. Phenomenal organization. The owner, James Pistoris, he actually like last my last year there, last spring. We were going My last day there, we were going to go watch an Olympiakos game. So like he all gave us these black Olympiakos jerseys. So the whole organization was going to wear those jerseys to the game. So me being me, of course, like anyone on the trip can testify to this. Like, I see like the opposing team, the away team in our hotel. So I'm like, oh man, like asking them all these questions. It actually turned out to be Rodion Skuroc, who used to play for the Brooklyn Nets, his br little brother, who I was speaking to. So I was like, oh man, if you have a jersey there, I'll wear this to the game later and like hype you guys up. So he was like, yes, yeah, of course. So I go up to him, like go up to his hotel room with him. He gives me a shirt. I like take the Olympiacos jersey up, throw it to Coach James, and I'm like, no, I'm not wearing this. I'm wearing the away team stuff. He was telling me how rowdy the fans get at this stadium. Me being me, like I don't really think like anything of it. I'm so used to like Madison Square Garden, Barclays Center, like Kaseya Center down in Miami. Like the fans aren't that crazy down there. But he's like, no, you can get into like a fight. These guys are ruthless over there. So I'm like, okay. I'll like for the sake of the trip and my respect towards him, I'll like let it slide. I'm gonna listen to you this time. So I'm wearing the Olympiacos jersey. I go into that stadium, I see like all their fans burning like jerseys, burning flags. They're in like a cage type of thing, like all their fans going crazy. I'm like, man, he saved my life there. I was like, I would have gotten ripped to shreds if I was wearing an opposing jersey. Yeah, and they told us not even to bring our phones, our wallets, or anything in the stadium because of how like rowdy the fans get in there. It was an amazing experience, though.
It's wild. I mean, if you think about it, it's a little bit different to US sports. I mean, some of the franchises, obviously, if we look at the Raiders, how many places across the country they've moved. These football clubs, they do not move. These people grow up, that is their life. That is what they live and die for. And as you say, I mean, listen, I've gone to very large rivalries in England, and you don't see the other fans. You walk on separate sides of the roads with the cops in the middle. You go to different bars beforehand. It's crazy because it can be dangerous. I'm not even playing games. It can be dangerous. You can get into trouble when you're not looking for it. So I like about the fact about the US that that's not really there, but I think we can also incorporate the passion and the fans singing together and stuff like that. That we can do here. But yeah, crazy. I mean, another story. I'm obviously said a huge Manchester United fan, and then my uncle actually had season tickets to Liverpool, and he was like, "Listen, Liverpool play United. Do you want to go up this weekend?" I was like, 100%, no worries. He said, "Cool. Under one condition, you cannot wear your Manchester United jersey anywhere. You're sitting with Liverpool season ticket holders. You cannot wear it." So I was like, "Oh, don't worry about it. Like, I snuck it under my jacket, all good. Sitting in the section, and Manchester United score, and I get up and kind of go like, yes, like under my breath, and this guy taps me on the shoulder, and I turn around, and he looks at me, and he goes, "Buddy, I suggest you don't do that again." And that's all he said to me. And from that point onwards, I was very, very quiet. So yeah, I think, I mean, you hear other stories about people like, they kind of just warn you, like, be careful what you're gonna do here. So yeah, I love that about European sports. Those people live and die for it. A little bit different here, but I think, yeah, I mean, obviously this conversation of the wall coming up and stuff like that, I think it will kind of change the way that other franchises go about it, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, I totally agree. Going back to like the opposing fans, I actually have one more story. I went to I as we previously discussed, I told you I'm a huge Miami Heat fan. So when they played the Celtics in Game 7 last year, I was like, I told my dad, man, I have to go to this game. I go to that game wearing my whole Jimmy Butler jersey, Jimmy Butler like coffee brand shorts. I'm the only Heat fan walking through that little concourse down there, Sea of Green, as they call it. Like Celtics fans galore, everyone cursing me out, letting me hear it. Me being like the type of person I am, I'm like going back at them, like talking garbage back to them and all this stuff. So I get inside every time the Celtics will score, the whole like my whole section just screaming at me, making fun of me. But good thing that, but then me like not backing down, I'm like standing up, acting like extra obnoxious back at them. And thank God the Heat won, so I got to like walk out of there alive. But like that would, in my opinion, the Boston Celtics, like the TD Garden, and during the playoffs, especially like Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals, I feel like that's like the closest thing that I've ever experienced to like those European fans over in Europe. So that I just
100%.
wanted to add on to that.
I can
So
imagine that was insane. TD Garden, I mean, Boston's known for having some rowdy fans. I mean, I'm a Laker fan in the Bay Area, so I've been through that a few times
little
myself.
animosity.
A little bit.
So in 2021, you began to work for True Capital Management. What was the transition like from your previous roles? What were the biggest challenges of this position? And are there any, in general, like key takeaways from this position?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of key takeaways in terms of ones that I'll expand on now. I think, yeah, True Capital Management for me was absolutely great. I think after the Clippers, I was looking to do something that was more involved with the athlete itself. Obviously, having a financial background, True Capital Management is basically a financial firm for athletes and entertainers. That's their business model. They're basically looking to create generational wealth and help these guys put an infrastructure in place to be successful from a financial side. So that was great. I knew, okay, I'd be working with finances. I've done that before. I'll be working with athletes. This is what I wanted to do. So yeah, I think moving to True Capital was great for me. The role itself, I think the transition was a little different from the LA Clippers, where that was more external sort of business development side, speaking to new people, doing this, that, and the next thing, where this was more relationship management. I was going out there, meeting all our clients. Obviously, firstly, I mean, when I got in there, I obviously didn't chat to all the clients. I had to learn the back end of everything. I mean, you have to basically learn their lives, their portfolios, their finances, their families, tax, legal, and I mean, the whole portfolio. You need to learn about how things were structured, why they're structured like that, and really get to know each client inside and outside. So that was very different from the Clippers, where there you kind of meet new people, bring them on, and then moving on. Where this was more sort of fostering and creating those relationships. As I moved onwards and upwards there, and actually got promoted, obviously had access to the athletes then, and just work with some great people. Some obviously we would work in conjunction with the agencies, whether it be their marketing agencies or their actual agency agents themselves. With their families. I mean, just basically dealing with everything, which was, I mean, I loved it. It's something that I definitely will go back to in my life. But yeah, it's challenging. I mean, I was working 7 days a week. You know, these things. If things come up on the weekend, you need to be there for your clients. You know, you need to be able to show them that, okay, you know, I'll be there for you for X, Y, and Z. If anything pops off, you can contact me at any time. So yeah, I mean, obviously working very, very hard in that position, and trying to just make all my clients' lives as easy as possible, and yeah, I just made some great relationships there, to be honest. Challenges of the position, I think with that itself, is just that it's so volatile. You just don't know. You could wake up and have the most chill day, and then at 4:59, something will kick off, and you have to take care of it.
Okay.
Or it was just being able to deal with the different things that were thrown at you, which was great. It kind of keeps you on your toes, and yeah, you kind of live where your feet are rather than living too far ahead. So that was definitely a challenge. I think the rest of it was great. I loved it. I understood it from a financial side. Getting to know these athletes, getting just to understand the business of it, and what happens behind the scenes, and I mean, how to structure different corporations, and X, Y, and Z. It really just, for me, was a great was a great experience. And I think, yeah, getting to the last point there, the key takeaways is really just being consistent. For me, that's what it was, is just consistency. On a day-to-day basis, giving your cl clients consistent communication, being consistently holding a high standard in terms of completing tasks, in terms of communicating, in terms of just everything. I think that was it. And I think a takeaway as well, I think for many agents and stuff like that, and people that work with athletes, is work-life balance. I mean, if you get too involved in it, before you know it, you're burnt out, and you can't sort of perform to the best of your ability. So it was the work-life balance of it, and yeah, just being consistent. And I think, one thing is when you're tired and when you run down, you tend to make emotional decisions. So it was kind of just being more rational, and I think all of us get into an emotional state at times. So yeah, I was kind of just being rational, and yeah, just enjoying it. I mean, athletes, great human beings, love them to death, but I mean, yeah, their life can be challenging. And yeah, I mean, dealing with people in general can be challenging. So I think you just have to have empathy as well, be empathetic, and just be there for them. And yeah, for me, being an athlete, I only want to see people succeed. The people that I was with, I loved seeing them succeed. I loved seeing them get into a new contract, make their money, buy a new house. You know, for me, that was really fulfilling. So yeah, I hope that kind of touches on True Capital a bit, but happy to chat about it a little bit more.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you were like kind of had your own little version of being Rich Paul in a sense at Clutch.
Not really. But y'all, we had our few we had our book of clients, me and my advisor. And yeah, I mean, in essence, you did feel like a bit of an agent. You had an accent, you had a line to them, you were chatting to them, you deal with everything from their perspective, whether it's Sort of organizing for them to be somewhere for an activation or endorsement deal, or chatting to their agents about certain fees that need to be paid or payouts. Or it was, yeah, it was just it was cool. Not quite rich, Paul. One day. But yeah, it was great to just dip my toe in the water and be able to, yeah, just get that exposure, work with those agencies, see what they do as well, network. We were working with, Clutch, WME, BDA, CAA, across the board, all the agencies. So,
Wow.
yeah, was a cool time for sure.
Which I don't know if this is confidential information or not. Like, you can totally not answer, but which athletes did you end up like meeting or conversing with?
Sure, I mean, I think obviously we won't go into all of them, but I think one that's public knowledge that is with True Capital Management. And WME is Luka Doncic. So for me, Luka was, I mean, he is my favorite player. He still is behind Bron, probably my favorite player in the league.
You can
I just
imagine.
loved his story. I loved everything about him. I love the way he played the game. And just his story. So Luka for me, I got the opportunity to, work with him a little bit before I sort of move more to the football side of things. But work with Luka, and it was just unreal to be able to meet him. I mean, I'm probably about 6'5", somewhere around there. He's a big boy. I mean, 6'7", he's a lot wider than you think he is. When you see him, he's a big boy. So yeah, being able to meet him, meet his support team, everyone around him, and just get familiarized with his portfolio, and just learn about him. I think he's an absolutely unreal athlete. I think he's one of the futures of the
Yeah.
league, and just a great person, from what I could pick up on with a small amount of time that I was able to interact with him. And very successful human being, obviously signing a Supermax,
Right.
and doing that. I mean, yeah, you got to give it up to BDA and his agents and everyone with WME and those guys for just putting that infrastructure in place. So that was definitely one of the highlights of working there.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, the Lakers got a big win over the Mavs last night, so I guess you're probably happy, really happy about that. Kind of snapped their
Yeah.
little cold streak right there.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Mavs kind of had a number for a little bit there. So nice to get a win over there. And I see Albert, well, I wouldn't call big three, but D'Angelo Russell, James, and
Finally.
AD went off there. So yeah, it's good to see. But I love the Mavs organization. I think obviously Cuban being involved there, the way that they treat their employees, the way the culture that they have, like, I think it's a great organization. So yeah, it's always nice getting a win over the Mavs.
Yeah, most definitely. So currently you work for Radiant as an account executive. What does this position entail? How have your previous positions helped you flourish in this current role?
Sure. So yeah, I mean, I think after True Capital Management, being in the Bay Area, being in San Francisco, I got an opportunity to potentially work in the tech sector and look at what SaaS is doing for businesses, and what that software can do, and it really did intrigue me. And for Radian itself, they were looking to utilize one of their product lines and really expand into sports. And it is an employee engagement software. And for me, I think one thing in life is I knew sports. I'm always going to be involved with sports somewhere, somehow. But to not be scared to take a jump elsewhere and see what it's like. If anything, it creates diversity on your CV.
Yeah.
It shows people that you have a diverse background. And for me, it was a cool step. I've learned. I mean, technologically, in terms of what I knew before and what I know now, it's a different level. And yeah, just being able to expose myself to different things, but also at the same time, go create relationships throughout these franchises with people, in their sales divisions and X, Y, and Z. And yeah, it's been great for me. And I think from my past roles, I think everything from the Clippers, from the Rangers back in the day, from Investec, from TCM, everything kind of allowed me to be successful in this role. Being able to obviously source business development, maintain relationships, and then grow those relationships on there, and then create partnerships off of that. I think everything has kind of come together and yeah allowed me to be successful in this role. And yeah, as I say, still getting to work with sports and in that role. But yeah, looking to obviously go back in that direction at some point, which will definitely happen. But yeah, as of now, just enjoying yeah, just the techscape, learning about everything. I mean, I think technological application in sports is coming. I mean, I think it's already kind of there. And I think being able to have that knowledge in my head for when I potentially start my own business or join another business elsewhere can really add value. So that was kind of where I was, yeah, kind of the route that I was going with going to Radiant and kind of where it's got me to now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been meaning to ask you, since you lived in like different parts of the world, does that help you with networking, like since you worked for like all these different organizations?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think what it does, number one, is allows me to have a bit of a diverse view on things. Obviously, not being born in the US and coming from the infrastructure, yeah, it gives me a little bit of a diverse view on things and being able to relate to people across the board. So, yeah, I think it does make networking easier because you have a lot of commonalities with people. I speak to people and they would have lived in London, or they would have lived or from Africa or from I think when you speak to people that are immigrants beforehand, I mean you kind of really have that that commonality of saying, we weren't originally from here and stuff like that. I think it's great because I think what you were referring to, it allows me to have sort of a global network. And if I'm working in the US and a company here is saying, we're looking to expand this, that, and the next thing, I have a little bit of insight on those markets and a few people there who I can speak to, and stuff like that. So it maybe does create a little bit of a differentiator, I would say. But yeah, I mean, I think the number one thing is just the different cultures, the different people. As you go through life, you kind of learn to, yeah, just to be interested in other people and to be interested in their cultures and their backgrounds. And I think that lesson has probably, definitely helped me along the way.
Oh wow, that's amazing. So I know you said that you're like really that you love your position right now as an account executive for Radiant, and you're just focusing on the here and now. But when you look, let's say 10 years into the future, are there any goals and or aspirations that you have for your career?
Definitely. I mean, I think we've all got goals and aspirations for where we want to be and what we want to do. For me, I think getting the knowledge base that I have now, very, very, very excited to move back towards the more core sporting markets. For me, I just think I want to work with athletes in any way, shape, or form that is. If that's working with them through an agency or working at a property, at a franchise itself, and actually being part of the team in a player development role. Or yeah, just someone that can support the players in all aspects. And I think from my perspective, I mean, I've always wanted to go the agent route, to go the agency route and see what that looks like. And just have an effect on their careers and set them up for success. And I think right now being able to create a full service agency that we care about them financially, mentally, I think. Right now, I mean, the mental side of the game is huge. I mean, sports performance and sports psychology is huge. So, yeah, just being able to do that, provide them an infrastructure to be successful or be part of a team. I mean, I think being a rugby player myself, one thing you miss is being part of a team, being part of a group of people that are working in one direction and pulling towards something. So, yeah, for me, I've got a lot of different business ventures that I want to look at, but my core business venture, I want to be, working with athletes, working in sports, being able to either help them from a marketing perspective, from a contractual perspective, from just from a human perspective, from a mental perspective. I think, yeah, that's something that I definitely want to do. And yeah, just be able to, I think one thing in my career as well is be able to, help other people achieve their dream. If I open a business and give someone opportunity or just help someone along the way, I think that's important for me. People have helped me, and I think just helping people along the way, and obviously got lofty dreams and goals. Coming to the US kind of needed a bit of time just to put my feet down and get entrenched there. But yeah, I was lucky enough to meet my wife in the US, and life is kind of
Congratulations.
getting a little more settled now. So yeah, looking this year to really kick off strong. And yeah, just looking forward to, I mean, for me, working in sport is never going to be a job. It's never going to be a job. If I come into to work every day and, working with athletes, working at a franchise, working at a property, speaking sport every day, it's never going to be a job for me. So yeah, I think that's where my goals are. I don't want to put too many things in place, rigid things in place, but that's kind of the direction that I want to be going in.
That's amazing. Well, Dylan, thank you so much for being on the show today. I wish you the best of luck with everything going forward.
Thanks so much, Ash. I appreciate your time, man. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you, and now I look forward to keep in touch as we move forward.
Thanks for listening to Gen Z Hoops. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe on Instagram, LinkedIn, and all major social media platforms at Gen Z Hoops. You can tune in and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and every other podcast platform on the planet. Get ready for the next episode.